This is a CNA podcast.
What should you do when you see a wild boar?
Run faster than your friend.
Appreciate them, but from a distance.
Run in a zigzag manner.
What happened last week could have been a scene right out of a Man vs. Wild episode. Two residents in Pongal were attacked in separate incidents by a marauding wild boar. One woman was bitten and dragged for nearly a metre. These brazen attacks prompted a hunt involving 20 men while N Parks deployed CCTVs and other traps. A week later, after a dramatic chase, the wild boar was caught and euthanized. Now, in a media interview, one such resident who has lived in Pongal for more than 10 years said that while he feels safer, he hopes there is a more sustainable way to keep these animals around. And that is the heart of the matter that we're trying to get to today. Is it possible for wild animals to live with humans without them encroaching on life and property? And when it comes down to it, what are the real-life implications of living in a city with nature? Does managing this in a sustainable manner mean culling should be a serious option? It's Thursday, March 4th. This is Heart of the Matter, recorded on Sennheiser, and I'm Lin Suling. With me to discuss these issues are Hao Chunbing, Director of Wildlife Management and Outreach at National Parks.
Hello.
Andy Ang, Research Scientist at Mandai Nature and President of the Jane Goodall Institute in Singapore.
Hello.
And Shane Choke, Research Assistant at the NTU Asian School of the Environment.
Hello.
Okay, guys, so let's start off. Just to step back a little bit, it was a while ago where Singaporeans used to actively seek out wild boars, and there were these lists of places where you could have wild boar sightings. But fast forward to today, there have been a few attacks this year, and men were even out hunting the wild boar after a woman was attacked. There were also reports of some fearful Pongal residents. Is that an accurate reading of the situation today? And are these attacks happening more frequently?
I think the word hunting is probably inaccurate. They were out looking for the pig, yeah. So not hunting per se.
Oh, but hunting for it as in looking for it.
Yeah, yeah. But the imagery is of people running around with bows and arrows.
And pitchforks.
Yeah, no, not that.
But Chunping, help us understand, are these encounters getting more frequent or the incidents getting more aggressive?
Well, there have always been encounters. But as we build up our urban areas and we become closer to nature, I think there'll be more of these encounters. Previously, there have also been encounters when people go into the nature reserves and pigs have been observed in many places as well.
So Andy and Shane, weigh in here. Do you think this resurgence in wildlife is getting out of hand? No one wants to get hurt, but is there a tipping point where perhaps more assertive actions should be taken to manage these populations of wildlife?
That's where my research with National Parks Board comes in, because we are currently studying the population and distribution of wild pigs in Singapore.
Wild pigs or wild boars?
Wild boars.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Is there a difference?
People use both names and usually they mean the same thing. The research is still ongoing, but the results that we produce from this project hopefully would let NParks inform their management policies, basically to get a good idea of where the wild boars are found across Singapore. And this would tie in nicely with how NParks manages the wildlife in Singapore.
And to your point about whether there have been a lot more sightings of wild pigs in Singapore, I guess we also need to look at some of the projects that are happening, whether is it habitat clearance, which, you know, resulted in wild animals like the pigs coming out of their natural habitats. And also, you know, with COVID, people are locked up at home. And then after that, with like the easing of the precautions, people are actually going out more to nature areas. So they're seeing wild animals more and actually posting more on social media. Sightings have been quite frequent in the past. It's just that people don't actually post about them or actually talk about them.
But the incidents that happened recently are in blocks 301, 308, which is the heart of Pongal residential areas, though not particularly near the forested areas. So if you're talking about location, what factors went into the recent incidents?
I don't have a map with me now, but I recall that to the east of the blocks, there's a small patch of forested area around Pongal Waterway Park. And actually, in between both blocks, there's a stream or a canal that runs across both blocks. And it leads to the Salita River, where there is also development taking place. So this boils down to the same thing as what Andy said, because there's development happening in the area as well. There are pigs, or boars rather, that used to reside in these areas, and they might have been disturbed by the ongoing construction or development in the areas.
Sounds like you're saying it's the unfortunate nature of these locations as well. So it's about Pongal, the forested areas around, that has also seen, I guess, monkeys, monitor lizards and more wildlife. Is that what you're saying?
I'm not too sure whether there are monkeys in Pongal. Oh, Andy's nodding. So, yes, there are monkeys in Pongo.
Oh, yeah? Tell us more about that.
In probably last month, there was also news reports of a Pongo resident seeing maybe a group of 20 monkeys sitting by the benches and the trees over there, overlooking this construction site, which used to be their forest. So, I think it's near Lorong Halus. Probably it's similar to the situation with the pigs where some of the animals might be displaced when their developments that are happening. So we need to look at mitigation measures or helping these animals to move to the next habitat location if there's a development that's happening.
Well, let's stay on factors that explain recent incidents. How much of it is food sources? Because there were also reports of wild boars being around because there are oil palm seeds that has led to their proliferation in that areas.
Just imagine a population of pigs in any natural habitat, right? I think the two main factors that actually help to control the population would be the presence of a natural predator, and that's one, and the other one would be food availability. So if you translate that into Singapore's context, we don't have any natural predators. We shot our last tiger about 90 years ago.
Oh.
Right? When we start bringing food, we have people bringing cartloads of bread, vegetables, and all with the best of intentions. They bring that and they start feeding the pigs. And then you take away that natural control mechanism, which had prevented the pigs from actually, you know, population soaring. And then now the pigs, if their population grows, and then we lead to more encounters then as well.
Mm.
But one of the other problem with feeding of pigs is that you are actually modifying their behavior.
How right? so?
Wild boars are wild animals, right? And they're inherently wild. And they have a self-preservation instinct. They want to avoid people. But pigs being pigs, they are so motivated by food, they are so easy to train to get them to overcome their natural shyness and to approach people and to see humans as two-legged vending machines.
Right? Oh dear.
And that's when the problem starts, when they start venturing out of their natural habitat and into population centres. So what started out as initially amusing can go south very fast.
So I think you raised a really good point about human feeding contributing to this, lah. And where quite a few people were charged with feeding wild boars in January, hopefully, apart from public education, deterrence is also a factor. Just opening up to everybody else, how much do you think that news will deter people from doing that, and therefore there will be fewer attacks, if not fewer encounters?
To majority of the public, it would serve as a really good form of deterrence. But I recall from the news report that I read about the particular individuals that were charged in Lorong Halus, they have been repeat offenders. And apparently, awareness efforts have not worked on them. So that's why the charges were increased, I believe, under penalties. This also serves as a stronger form of deterrence or warning, rather, to would-be offenders that would want to try feeding the pigs or the boars because they see videos on social media of them being very cute or meek or very friendly to passerbys, when that's usually not the case, and that's more often than not, that usually doesn't happen to wild animals.
So one question I have also is, if we're trying to tell people not to feed wild boars and not to feed wildlife, should we also extend that to stray cats and stray dogs? Because you can get fined up to 5K under the Wildlife Act for feeding pigeons even. So why not these other animals that might harm humans and cause disamenities?
If you like, you encounter 100 stray dogs, right? And then if you are not dog savvy or not dog wise, then sometimes you get an incident, but that doesn't mean that stray dogs are going to harm humans.
That's true, but if you feed one dog here and one dog there, and then somehow 10 dogs come together, and that might cause incidents?
In fact, it's part of a whole suite of measures that actually help to manage the population. So these people who feed the dogs, they are actually brought in under an umbrella to be part of this program where they actually neuter the dog. And it helps to manage that population.
I believe it's called the Trap Neuter Release Program.
Yeah, TNRM.
But does it seem like we're treating different species quite differently though? Because wild boars on the one hand don't feed no pigeons as well, but then we can feed stray dogs under such carefully tended circumstances.
Yeah, those are domesticated animals.
They are
our pets.
But then the related question also is, there are other animals in Singapore also that people do feed. There are otters, there are also chickens in Tampines, Fort Canning, their numbers have grown, and there were cases also of NParks trying to catch them.
By and large, it's a very good thing that Singaporeans over the last few decades, we've come to really appreciate what we have in nature.
Mm.
And that's really good news for all of us. But part of that process of learning to live with nature, on the other hand, you have to learn to respect what you appreciate. And if that respect is missing, then problems can arise. Respect can also mean treating wild animals as wild, letting them remain wild. and not trying to tame them, to domesticate them, not trying to make them into exotic pets, not trying to pet them and call them David.
But under that approach, right, where does feeding stand? How does feeding feature in these considerations?
You should never feed wild animals. That is just the number one rule.
Okay, but are chickens an invasive species? They're wild animals, or?
I believe the ones you're talking about are the red R.E.D., jungle fowl. The species is native in Singapore, but some of them have already been crossbred with local domestic chickens. However, I mean, these are still considered wild animals. Like what Andy said, you should never feed wild animals. So there's a clear line that we are drawing here between wild animals and domesticated animals.
I think you've all raised really good points about the very careful considerations that must go into managing wildlife quite carefully, and that's a very fine balance to be struck. But when it comes to wild boars, right, is there such a thing as too many? And what is too many? Because as you've mentioned, Shane, there's the trap-neuter release program that we adapt to stray dogs. Would we consider that kind of approach to wild boars if the population starts to get out of hand? I know it's a bit premature at this point in time because we're not seeing like tons of wild boars coming up to the fore. Is there a time when we might consider that?
So the trap-neuter release management program was developed and executed based purely on domesticated dogs. I don't think this method would work for wild animals in general, not just for pigs. So there's definitely other methods or measures that should be considered and taken to manage wild boars, finding suitable areas to shepherd them to, trying to coax them or urge them to move to different areas that are less human populated.
Yeah. So Andy, what's your take on what should be done in Pongo then? Are we going to move them somewhere else?
I think it's not just Pongo, but if you look at the whole of Singapore, one key thing is definitely habitat, right? Because your question is how many pigs are too many pigs? So how much forest do we need to keep in order to have our native biodiversity for ecosystem to thrive? And also we need to look at connectivity of the habitats. So say the different habitats of forests, you know, they're isolated because of roads, buildings or developments, then the animals will have to come out from the forested area into the city, you know, to get from one place to another. So during this time, there might be encounters that could be negative because we might not know how to behave when we see animals like wild pigs. Also, to Chun Bing's point, they don't have natural predators. So if we were to continue to feed them and their population get out of control, what do we do? People think that, oh, sterilization could be a method. I agree with you that it's still premature to think about that. And sterilization usually gives people the impression that it is the animal's problem. That's why we are trying to control the population. If there's similar issues that arise in the future, are we just going to go straight into sterilization and try to control the population when we should really reflect on our behavior and what's happening in
Singapore? Could you explain a little bit about why you think culling is controversial and should be wrongly carefully considered after every other options have been exhausted?
Chun Bing also mentioned a very good point just now about respecting wildlife. If we are seeing issues like, oh, pigs coming into residential area, let's cull them. There's otters coming into, you know, my pond eating koi, let's cull them. So whenever there's problem, we think of controlling the animals. I don't think that's the case when we want to live in harmony with nature, biodiversity, and, you know, how we can protect the environment in order to mitigate issues arising from climate crisis, for example. These are all really big issues, but we're coming down to some of the details, like how do we actually protect biodiversity when we don't respect biodiversity?
I'll put a pin in there. I think the related question also is there must be a middle ground. It's not culling entirely, but it's not also not developing areas for housing and whatnot. So then the question that has arisen is maybe it's about protecting people and property and therefore demarcating boundaries quite clearly. For example, electric fences or boarding up certain places that are residential but close to forested areas. Is that an approach that has been taken, Chun Bing, or should be considered more aggressively, you think?
Definitely. Having barriers to prevent incursions such as this would be one option. Excluding the pigs from coming to areas where it's built up or actually vice versa as well. That would actually be one avenue that we can look at.
But what are the physical barriers that you're looking at? Are these just walls or even electric fences?
Fences are a good start. Mm-hmm. And we have had specifications made up for fencing, which will actually be more certain of keeping the animals outside. Well, boars, they are very, very food motivated. And if you have someone continually even approaching a fence where the pigs are on the other side and you keep throwing food over,
oh dear,
they will still congregate, right? And the population will still grow. And then after that, you have to think about how we're going to manage that population.
You know, Chiu-Ming, you raise a very interesting point. We've been talking about managing animals, but I guess it's the people that we also need to manage, the human beings. It's interesting that you say that because then it lends on to the point that Andy was trying to make, which is the role of urbanization and our city nature aspirations. That on the one hand, while we build more HDBs and buildings and urbanize and Singapore greens, the challenge also is as we up the quotient of plants and green spaces, we may be drawing wildlife into urban spaces where human beings roam. How much of the wild boar problem do you think is a challenge of human beings encroaching into the natural habitats of wildlife? Because ultimately, Andy, you also mentioned that people are venturing into nature spaces.
You said that managing human behavior, that's really the way to go. Because, you know, rather than trying to tell the animals what to do, it's easier if we can talk to people, understand their perspectives, and try to change certain behavior like feeding animals or touching animals or getting too close. That's definitely one thing. City in nature is vastly different from city in a garden. So we need to see nature in a brand new light, because some people would say that, oh, you know, I don't want pigs, I don't want snakes, I don't want monkeys, they're not nature. But, you know, maybe hornbills are great, butterflies are great, otters are great.
So we're quite selective then.
Bias, because I would say, sure, some animals are more charismatic than the others. We definitely need to try to see the functions and the roles that different animals play in our ecosystems so that they can be treated on an equal ground or at least fairly. And different animals, different species has a role to play. So we cannot selectively say, oh, you know, we want less of this and more of that, because then the ecosystem will be imbalanced.
You know, it raises a very interesting point, which is there seems to be these contradictions. So when we asked our Facebook followers what they thought of the news of the wild boar incidents, there were people on the one side who were saying these wild boars need to be culled. And then there were people who were saying, look, human beings, you need to stay away from wild boars and stop disturbing them. And yet, interestingly, there's been this increasing consciousness of conservation and respecting biodiversity when a recent survey by Wildlife Reserves Singapore say 2 in 3 Singaporeans say they are willing to do more for conservation. So how do you reconcile this? Because on the one hand, it does seem as if we are trying to get under control our approach to wildlife. But yet, on the other hand, we have this general willingness to want to also do more because of that city nature aspirations. How do you reconcile these contradictions?
A good case study, to me at least, is residents that stay close to nature reserves and parks, specifically those, let's say, for example, in Lower Pierce Reservoir, for example. In the past, these residents were not very nature-loving, mainly because they had a lot of incidents or conflicts with the macaques living in the forest across them. The macaques would climb over their houses.
It's like got bitten as well, sea bruises.
I think so, and rummage through their rubbish bins, dustbins and stuff. But through education, I believe from the Jane Goodall Institute, over the years, constant engagement with residents in the area, they've started to at least change their mindset or thinking towards wildlife. I've seen, personally myself, I think some measures taken by residents, tying up the rubbish bins.
Right, they just learn to adapt, right? Yeah. They just learn to roll the punches.
It's easier to talk to humans than animals and manage humans than animals. Education really is the way to go. Of course, it can't be the only method that we are using. It's a proven method that works, but it takes time.
Maybe some residents might not like certain animals, or, you know, because animals might intrude into their houses, take the food and all. Sometimes it's just getting them to know options that they can do, like tying the bins, that's very simple, or harvesting your fruit in the garden so that animals won't approach, or just don't leave food lying around out of sight, out of mind, right, for the monkeys. Like the survey said, 2 out of 3 Singaporeans or people in Singapore would like to do more. Sometimes they just don't know what they can do or how they can do. So if we can provide those information through public education, maybe also in the national curriculum, people learn from young. Gradually, when we change behavior, they will have a better interaction with wildlife, and that could be good.
To make anything to add?
Education really goes a long way, especially to our younger generations. Early on in my career, when I was in Pulau Ubin, we've had children who come over and we bring them to see parts of Ubin and all that. And I realized to my horror that the children couldn't recognize what a chicken was.
Right? Wow.
The only chicken that the kids could recognize were those that were defeathered and deep fried.
Oh no, the ones in the supermarkets.
Yeah. I think now we've gone somewhat away from that, and the children are now better. I mean, they have seen, they're more exposed to that. And that's all part of being exposed to nature. And that nature also helps to pull them away from their iPads and all that. So I've got an 11-year-old and I know that nature helps to remedy that. As we go along educating our public, I think we will start creating a better consciousness of what nature is. That it comes in a package deal. You appreciate the fresh air that the greenery brings. You appreciate the birds that chirp. But you also realize that some birds don't chirp so nice. Right, and we've grown past a stage where we had residents last time asking us, could we have more flowers here that will attract butterflies? But please, we don't want caterpillars. So the kind of situation is more distant now. It doesn't occur so regularly, and I think so. Education and telling people what nature entails, it really helps.
So just rounding out this podcast, right? What is the balance that you hope to see Singapore striking in our approach to, I suppose, wild boars, but also more generally speaking, wildlife?
Sometimes people have this false dichotomy that if we want to urbanize or develop, then the forests have to go. But it shouldn't be the case. Why would it be that, you know, for urban development, then the forests have to be sacrificed? We can look at different ways, make use of more efficient ways of looking at land use. So say, for example, maybe car parks that could be built from a single story to multiple stories, or facilities that people are not really using anymore. Can we actually look at ways to convert them? So it's not always that if we need a building, let's clear the forest.
What's your take, Shane?
Adding on to what Andy said, thinking about the managing the land, that the scarce land that we have, the thing is, development is constantly happening in Singapore. It's not something that would go away, at least in these two decades or so, I believe. So what we need to look at is how to better manage the existing land that we have, and also map out what are the remaining remnant patches of forest that we have and the value that they have. This brings us back to a recent incident as well, the clearing of the forest. That has been a controversial issue, and there have been many, many comments made about it on different camps. The careful management of the scarce forest patches that we have left and managing the wildlife within this forest. So the boars in Punggol, for example, one of the factors might have been the clearing of land within their habitat. If we continue to develop multiple land patches without careful consideration of the wildlife that resides within, these incidents might increase in the future.
Chunbing?
I hope to see more collective discussions on where we want to be as a nation in terms of wildlife and biodiversity, how much nature we want in our midst. We are having a city in nature, and we have to discuss amongst ourselves what that entails. What does that look like? How much nature? Is that nature allowed to run rampant? Do we need to employ some management of it? Or is it just completely manicured?
Well, there you have it. Living alongside the wild in a city of nature can be quite complex, so please stay safe. You've been listening to Heart of the Matter. This podcast was recorded with Sennheiser, and you can find previous episodes on the CNA website, app, MeListen, Apple, and Spotify. The team behind this episode, Crispina Robert and Erin Low. And I'm Lin Suling, signing off until we meet again next week.